4.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, created by Douglas Adams. The Hexagonal Phase, based on And Another Thing, by Owen Colfer.
Researchers at the University of Maximegalon argue that the gods came into existence moments after the Big Bang, and thus did not create the universe, but vice versa. Despite this, gods had a great time of it for millennia, worshipped for being all-knowing and all-seeing, and impregnating the occasional mortal. But when science developed to the point where it could duplicate many of their tricks, blighting a crop was no longer as big a deal. Virgin births became common. In fact, many societies preferred virgin births as they cut out the need for in-laws. Horrified, the gods retreated to their homeworlds, vowing never more to consort with mortals. So serious were the Aesir, the Norse gods, about this that they have surrounded their world, Asgard, with a shell of ice, leaving only one point of access, Bifrost, the Rainbow Bridge, guarded by the all-seeing god Heimdall. So, when the Heart of Gold appears at the gates of Bifrost, piloted by Zaphod's recently detached left brain, the outlook is not promising.
Hey, LB, have we arrived? Are we normal yet?
Normality's for squares, bro.
But I'm looking at the outside of the ice barrier. I want to be looking at the inside.
Yeah, tough one. The Aesir have installed a new shield since our last visit.
What the zark was that?
No.
No? Who is this?
Heimdall, the watcher on the bridge. Now, improbably yourself away before I set the dragons on you.
Hey, just hear me out.
Any question you could ask me, the answer would be no.
Is Thor home?
No, he bloody isn't.
Really?
This is Asgard, dummy. Of course he is.
Great! So, could I just...
No, it's impossible, my friend. And when I say my friend, I mean my enemy who I want disemboweled and then sprinkled with salt.
Oh, come on, Heimdall. What say we put the past behind us where it belongs and just start again? We're both rational adults.
We're both rational adults, but Thor isn't. He's a bag of nerves with a helmet on top after what you did.
That's why I want to talk to the kid, to explain and...
Repent? Make amends for your mistakes?
Yes. Yes, that's it. I repent. And I deserve penance.
Very well, Beeble Bastard. Come outside, and let's talk about amends.
Outside? Into space? Won't that be cold? And, airless?
Fear not, mortal. I will extend a bubble of atmosphere to you.
And I just step outside.
Out you come, Zaphod. Alone.
What do you think, LB?
Oh, you should go. It's heroic. Step into the airlock and say a few words. I'll video it for your sub-ether blog before I open the outer door. An atmosphere bubble should work fine.
Okay, but soften the downlighting a tad. Makes my hair look smaller.
Got it. Okay, action.
Truly great people like me, Zaphod Beeblebrox, and we are truly great, are never afraid to suck.
I've waited so long to do that.
And inevitably, there is no atmosphere bubble. Heimdall leaves Zaphod thrashing in the inky void. Zaphod would like his last thoughts to have been noble and brave.
And so, the moment has arrived. I grieve bitterly, not for myself, but for those who have been denied the ecstasy of knowing Zaphod Beeblebrox. How will I be remembered? As a supernova, perhaps, that blazes in the night sky, granting those that saw it a moment of wonder and hope. This would be enough. If I could choose my own epitaph, I would simply say that Zaphod Beeblebrox surprised everyone. In a good way.
In actual fact, though, his thoughts are these.
Oh, Zark! Big, big, big space everywhere! And nowhere! My hair will collapse! Heimdall, you total bastard! What underpants am I wearing? You need to think about these things for the autopsy. Hey, I bet this gets big coverage. It's not every day a galactic president gets dumped out of an airlock by his own head!
Then, after more or less 29 seconds, Heimdall lobs out an atmosphere yo-yo to reel Zaphod in to safety.
Zark, what's that? Whoa! Belgium, what did you do that for, Heimdall? I could have died out there.
It was tempting to leave you, but a promise is a promise. Now, what are the last words of the famous President Feeblebrox?
Oh, are you calling names now? Is that all you've got? Two can play at that game?
What are you talking about?
You guys all have, like, a secret name. A name of power. Thor told me about it one night. We were so hammered, you've no idea.
No mortal can know our other name.
Too late, bent stick.
Ah, damn you.
Let me go.
If anyone calls me bent stick on Asgard, I am bound to civility. Bent stick. What sort of divine name is that?
A lame one?
Once I was called Asgard's Eye, you know. Bloody Loki starts with bent stick. Odin thinks it's hilarious.
You know what I see?
What?
I see a genuine hero. And there are only a dozen of those in the universe. Me, you, and four others.
Well, Odin doesn't see it like that.
Well, then Odin doesn't deserve you.
That's nice.
So, can I go on in?
In you go. Thor is probably in the Well of Urd, drowning his sorrows. He more or less lives there these days.
Do they serve goggle blasters?
No. You can have one beer with him, if he will permit it.
One beer. I'll just sip.
Does the t-shirt have to be wet? It's a bit distracting.
Arthur Dent is not a fan of space travel. He is particularly unfanatical about stopovers, given that spaceports are even duller than airports used to be. Even Birmingham Airport. Birmingham in the sublime Rostrocks of Horsecatcher beyond the balastras of the Seven Binges, that is. As Waubagger's ship speeds through dark space, however, Arthur is enjoying his journey thoroughly as he talks to the great lost love of his life, Fenchurch, who sits on a cloud in the corner of his cabin. Sadly for Arthur, this is not the actual person he met and fell for back on Earth, but a holographic construct drawn from his memory by the ship's computer.
I can portray this Fenchurch person naked, if you'd prefer.
No, a dry t-shirt is fine. It was raining the night we met, so I was wet too, if that gets me off the hook at all.
There. Better?
Thank you. Look, can you show me these Grebulons? I'm curious to see what kind of people destroyed my planet.
Do you seek closure, Arthur Dent? I could wipe those memories.
I don't feel too bad, to be honest. I thought losing Earth would hit me harder. Maybe if I look into the faces of those responsible, I might feel a little worse and a bit less guilty.
Here, I'll put a feed from their base on the screen.
What are we looking at?
The Grebulons on planet Rupert, looking for something else to monitor. Now Earth is gone.
Soft sofas, magazine racks, a home entertainment system. They look so ordinary. Nice, even.
It's always the nice ones.
Why would they do it, then?
Maybe someone put them up to it. Let's pull out a little, past Pluto. There. Just about to jump into hyperspace. See it?
Good grief! That's a Vogon bureau cruiser. Jerks, every one of them. Complete assholes. That bunch killed all of my people.
Well, not all of them.
Nearly all. Three of us. That's all that are left.
It soon will be only three.
You're being very Fenchurch-like and cryptic. Please explain how Trillian Random and myself are not the only surviving humans.
I just had a little rummage in the Vorgon's computer. They're off to hunt down a colony of Earthlings.
Other survivors? From Earth?
Quite a lot, it seems. moved over the last few months to a freshly constructed planet in the dark nebula of Sulianis Amram.
What the hell is a dark nebula? Can their computer give you any details?
Too late. Even my instruments cannot hack through hyperspace.
We must warn them, surely, or follow the Vogons to this dark nebula place.
Why would you follow them? Vogons don't stop till the job's done. Why give yourself the heartache?
What kind of Earthling would I be if I didn't want to save my species?
An alive one? Not blown to atoms?
We have to turn round, or push the go faster button. Something.
Calm yourself, Arthur Dent. Wowbagger goes where his schedule takes him.
He was going to Earth, wasn't he? To insult Earthlings.
True.
Well then, if the last Earthling colony is somehow in this dark nebula, Wowbagger could insult the Earthlings there.
You state your case well.
You're absolutely right. I do state my case well. I'll go and state it to Wowbagger immediately. I just hope he'll listen.
Don't be too polite. Extreme language might help focus his attention. Use strong words. Perhaps a Zark and even the expression Porn Wrangler.
Whatever that means. Right. I Zarking well will.
Wowbagger the Infinitely Prolonged is not the first of his line to be afflicted by immortality, nor the first to wish it had not been thrust upon him. His ancestor, Wowbagger Ultrajax, had at some point early in his eventful life stolen the great quenchless stone of Firefrand from the majestic Vantrashell of Lob. So far from being thereby enabled to lead a life of shameless luxury and hedonism as he had hoped, he'd been forced to spend the greater part of his time fleeing the Silastic armor fiends of Stritorax as they pursued him from world to world. When the Silastic armor fiends flagged in the chase, their places were taken by the strenuous Garfighters of Stug. And when they had had enough, the strangulous Stylettons of Haglavinda pursued Wowbagger back again, until he began seriously to regret that he had ever stolen the wretched stone in the first place. His vexation was increased by the fact that the power for which the quenchless stone was famous was that of bestowing eternal life on its owner. And it was beginning to look as if he had an awful lot more of this aggravating lifestyle to look forward to. He could simply get rid of the stone, but being now something over 300,000 million years old, he couldn't help feeling that it would be an awful waste of time if he were just to give up now. Added to which, he would of course simply drop down dead if he lost the stone, and he regarded this as a constant and annoying temptation rather than an acceptable solution. The fate of Wowbagger Ultrajax is as yet unknown. For all we know, he's still on the run. His many times great-grandson, sitting on the bridge of his ship, shares the curse of everlasting life, albeit thanks to a particle accelerator and a pair of rubber bands.
Somebody should write a piece about you, Wowbagger. Who is this green immortal who has decided to insult everyone in the entire galaxy in alphabetical order?
That's not how I do it anymore. The alphabetical thing was amusing for a while, but then people began to expect me and returned the favour.
Saying stuff like, you're a pathetic loser.
Random.
Your daughter is broadly correct.
Or, I didn't know lizards wore suits.
I'm trying to talk to your mother.
Or, is that smell considered pleasant where you come from?
Random. I'm not leaving you. Never again. So there's no need for all this hostility.
You should listen to your mother. You might learn something.
From her? No thanks. I'd rather stay stupid.
Your wish has already been granted.
So, you have abandoned your alphabetical trademark?
Yes, I do whole planets at a time now. I pull into orbit and drop a data bomb into the atmosphere. Everyone gets an email and an audio file. When they press play, they're left in no doubt as to how I feel about them.
And how do you feel about them?
I despise them.
So, you take pleasure in slandering them?
Oh, immensely. Look, I think it's time you called me Bowerick.
Bowerick?
It's my first name.
Bow Wowbagger.
That does it. Ship, isolate the younger female.
Hey, get me out of this!
Now sedate her.
What the fuck?
You sedated my daughter! How dare you!
She's perfectly fine. It's just a viridigenous gas. It'll cheer her up a bit. Look, she's smiling.
Wake her up!
Why? Have you heard how she talks to you?
We've had our problems. They are our problems. Now release my daughter.
I think we should leave her in there. From what I've gathered, you're hardly mother of the century, so what's a few more days apart?
Zark you, Bowerick. You're hiding. You hide in this ship, behind words. You're a sad, lonely person, wasting an incredible gift. You had eternity and you wasted it.
Finally, we agree on something.
How soon do you have to die?
Not immediately.
Good. Because I want to kiss you.
Oh.
Hey!
Random's awake?
Must replenish those gas canisters.
Please don't make me watch!
Computer, release the girl.
Oh. Thank you. I was about to be scarred for life.
Right, you Zarkers. We need to turn this turd bucket around and get our palm-wrangling buttocks to the dark nebula of Sulianus and Rom.
Dad, what are you on?
Was that a bit harsh? Sorry, everybody. What is a palm-wrangler, anyway? Oh, never mind. We have to go and save a planet.
The self-respect of Vogons as a race has survived through determined extrospection. Apart from disdainful dabblings in the poetic arts, most Vogons try to focus their attention very much on other species in order to avoid dwelling on their own various physical and psychological shortcomings. Vogons rarely spend time in flotation tanks. They never meditate in sweat lodges, and they most certainly do not gaze at their misshapen faces in mirrors. The only race ever to have successfully perverted a Vogon planetary demolition order were the Tubaviks of Sinustra, who sent a reformatting screen virus to the Vogon fleet which turned all their monitors into mirrors. 5 minutes after the virus had uploaded, the Vogon ships turned their torpedoes on each other. As the Vogon Bureaucruiser class ship, Business End, lurches in and out of hyperspace, in much the same way as a Betelgeusean Hitchhiker's Guide researcher might lurch in and out of bars in downtown Han Wavell, Constant Moan, the son of its commander, Prostetnik Vogon Jeltz, updates his journal.
The Secret Diary of Constant Moan, aged 28 and 3/5. Update. I am now convinced that I am not as much of an utter bastard as my father likes to think. I lack krumpst, and instead I seem to possess sensitivity and even empathy. It is horrible, awful. How is a constant ever to become a prosthetic with wishy-washy emotions like these? Worse, I don't want to be a prosthetic. My blood pump just isn't in it. I don't want to kill anyone, even with the right paperwork. Oh, Zark. That's it. Oh, Zarking Zark. There are things more important than paperwork. Oh. What is happening to me? I do not hate myself. I do not hate myself. And if I do not hate myself, maybe, perhaps, others could like me too. Oh, but not if I kill them first. Why did I tell Father about the colony on Nano? Well, I told him because it's common knowledge, and he would have found out. Then I would have been the one who didn't tell him. But without me, the Earthlings have no chance. That's it. That's what I must do. Save the humans. And survive it.
The story behind the purchase of the planet Nano by Hillman Hunter involves two confidence tricksters. One is Hunter himself, whose pose is that of a stereotypical Irishman from a bygone era. In other words, the whole bag of potatoes. Using this homely persona, Hillman set about selling expensive stuff to rich people. He hawked cars and yachts before graduating to horses and overseas property. By the age of 40, Hillman was a millionaire on commission alone. But yet there was more money to be had, Hillman realized, if a sharp person could figure a way to round up all the rich folk in one place and keep them shelling out for stuff on a daily basis. But how to achieve this? The answer came to him in a flash of TV news headlines. The short-staffed Sisters of Occasional Succor were forced to auction off one of the church's properties, an island which contained a gated community of wealthy pensioners. Hillman purchased the plot. Upon it, he developed Ireland's most luxurious spa residence, and to attract only the richest patrons, invented a religion too.
If you're rich, you don't have to do anything to be a nanite. Nothing gets cut off, nobody holds you underwater, no scripture, no guilt, no commandments. It couldn't be easier. The planet Nano has been prepared for your reward. At the first sign of an apocalypse, you will be collected and flown there first class to live happily ever after.
Hillman's venture was a huge success. In months, he was shepherd of a wealthy flock, dying off at a rate of half a dozen per month and leaving him sizable chunks of the Earth's wealth. And this was where the second confidence trickster came in. One Thursday evening, a video call came through from an out-of-area number.
Where'd that soap go now? Never mind.
Hello? Hillman Hunter speaking. Who might this be calling at such an hour?
The answer to your prayers. The lucky charm at the end of your rainbow, baby.
Oh, really, O'Reilly?
Speak clearly, Frood. Your accent is confusing my fish.
Look, I'm very busy. I have a religion to lead.
And a planet to take it to?
Eh?
I have been looking for an investment on Earth, which won't be around for long, by the way.
Get away with you.
What would you say if there was a planet Nano?
Nano? There is one. Because I'm bloody right all the time. Cheers, I must check the lottery in case there's a rollover.
I said if. There is no planet called Nano. Not yet.
Go on.
Seems to me that all these old rich humans you've got together will pay good money if someone actually takes them to somewhere called Nano before Earth explodes.
Eh?
And I happen to have just the place.
Look, I like a joke as well as the next fella, but it would take one dickens of a convincing argument for a scam as big as this to work.
How about a big spaceship just appearing out of thin air? Do you think that would do it?
You can do that?
You bet. And once your loaded old folks arrive at Nano with all their nurses and housekeepers and whatnot, they're going to need a supreme leader, right? A head honcho.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
So, deal?
Deal. Oh, now, I'll need to hang up.
You got a problem?
I've just found where the soap disappeared to, and it'll take some getting back.
Back in the present, aboard Wowbagger's ship in dark space...
Goosenog.
Ford Prefect is less than happy with the view from his cabin porthole.
At least there's stuff to see outside when you're travelling with an improbability drive. Penguins instead of nebulae, giant sherbet lemons instead of planets, white goods instead of asteroids. But dark space? Not a sausage. Literally. I'm decent.
That's a matter of opinion. What you doing?
This and that.
You've got UBID open on your guide.
Yes, the old guide has a pretty good sub-ether connection, and this ship system is so fast, I bet myself a second tankard of beer that I could not spend my entire projected lifetime's earnings before blinking. I won.
Ooh, what did you get?
A couple of luxury space yachts, 300 gallons of bounso jelly with garlic, a small continent on Antares, and several potted deadly when watered megaflora for the executive washroom at Infinidim Enterprises, all charged to my limitless dino charge card.
Infinidim? But that's the guide. You work for those guys.
I'd feel a twinge of guilt about sticking it to Zani Whoop Van Hal if he wasn't a gutless stooge who took bribes from Vogons.
Fair point.
And you? You look a bit green.
I've just been sealed in a glass tube with a cloud of gas that was supposed to make me happy.
Happiness? That would never do, would it?
Not when your mother is making out with that horrible alien right under your nose. Oh, disgusting.
Ah, you're not too happy about this romantic development.
No, I am not. Wowbagger is an arrogant, snooty...
Palm wrangler? Is that the word you kids use these days?
It'll do.
So why don't you talk to Arthur about it? He's your biological patriarch.
I tried, but he's besotted too, with his blasted computer.
It's not unknown. I had a cousin with perspiration problems who spent 2 years shacked up with his dehumidifier. Love is love and all that. Don't judge unless you want someone else to come along, possibly someone green, and judge you. And you'll say, come on, what's all this judging for? Don't judge unless you want someone else to come along and judge you, and so on. Sorry, I've had the ship replicate me a few beers, so I'm paraphrasing.
That's, really good, Ford. wise.
No charge for that nugget, young missy.
I'm going to go back to my room to shower and think really hard about not judging people.
Parenting. Nothing to it.
I don't know what all the fuss is about.
Where's that dino charge card?
I'll look later.
40 weeks first.
Will Ford discover that teenagers only indulge in sweet talk as a handy distraction when there's something the teenager needs to steal, like a limitless credit card? What will Random Dent use UBID's retro buy time window to purchase from two centuries in the past? Could it be something more sinister than 300 gallons of Banzo jelly with garlic? Tremble in anticipation until the next installment of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. In that episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Hexagonal Phase, based on And Another Thing by Owen Colfer, with additional material by Douglas Adams, John Lloyd was the book. Simon Jones played Arthur Dent, Ford Prefect was played by Jeff McGiven, Zaphod Beeblebrox, Mark Wing Davey, Trillian, Sandra Dickinson, Random, Samantha Bayar, Wowbagger, Toby Longworth, Constant Moan, Andy Seacombe, Heimdall, Tom Alexander, and Mitch Benn was Left Brain. Fenchurch was played by Jane Horrocks, and Hillman Hunter by Ed Byrne. The music was by Philip Pope, and the production research by Kevin John Davies. The announcer was John Marsh. The episode was written and directed by Dirk Maggs. The producers were Dirk Maggs, Helen Chatwell, and David Morley. And it was a perfectly normal production for BBC Radio 4. Listeners are reminded that, following the accidental laundering of the Turin Shroud in a soap powder commercial, dino charge cards are not recognised on UBID sites dealing in holy relics.